Once again, the outline hasn't changed, but I have some up here if you are interested. It won't change for a while yet. All right. Do me a favor and turn with me this evening to the book of Acts, chapter 6. And then what you do is use your imagination. All right, now let us begin with this and look together at Ephesians, I should say, chapter 6. Now, let us together just walk back a bit. If, in fact, we come down here to this section, which has to do with the parents and children, in their role to each other, help me walk backwards this evening. I mean, let's see if you can help me do that. Help me walk backwards, and we'll move from this point back to where we all started from. First of all, if I asked you as we go back from here, and we're starting from chapter 6 of Ephesians, verses 1 to 4, has to do with parent-child, verses 5 to 9 with slave and masters, what is the first thing toward to which it goes back? Just think about that for a while. If we have husband, wives, parent, children, slave, masters, what does it all fall under? What is that sort of springs it all loose and sort of the heading of it all in the passage? Most immediately, let's go back to the most immediate. We'll start working our way backwards. Submitting. Okay, so therefore we end up with that the word submission, which is in verse 21 of chapter 5, and it is the thing that begins. It's the summary. Actually, I look at the Greek text. It's interesting. They've made a break between 20 and 21, but it is the summary part of the section that precedes. But it's also that which breaks off into what follows. Okay, first of all, then this relationship of parent-child, child-parent, all falls under the umbrella of that hupatasamanoi, the willing submission of verse 21. Now, walk backwards with me again then. That willing submission is a part of five other what that go back to where, okay? What are we talking about here? It is the fifth of what? The what? Participles, exactly. There are five participles here, okay? This is good. Greek class 101, this is nice. Five participles are, what are they? They're speaking to one another, psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing, making melody, giving thanks, being submissive. But by the way, just with that, okay, these are five participles here. It is interesting because if... I don't see enough Greek testaments out there, but again, I can't show you the point. But anyhow, if you look at all of these participles that are here, by the way, they all have, just and some of you will allow me for a while, they have new tau's in them, which tells me that they're what kind of participles? Active participles, exactly. Now, what's interesting is four of them are active participles. Speaking, singing, making melody, giving thanks. All of a sudden we come to the one of submission. It's significant that it's still a present participle, which means it's continuous, but it changes to a middle participle, which suggests there's a volitional aspect to this, which is exciting about it because, so that it makes that move to a volitional type of thing, a participatory thing. Now, let me then go back, okay? So what we have is, we have this matter of children obeying the parents, which comes under the submission heading of verse 21, which then is a part of five participles, which go back to what? What? Before that, we need to go back slowly. Huh? Being filled by the Spirit. So the filling by the Spirit. So all of these are produced by the Spirit of God. Are we all right so far? So all of these produced by the Spirit of God. Yes? So here we have the obeying here goes back to the submitting, which the heading is submission, and it comes wife to husband, and husband's response to wife, and child to parent, and father to child. And then you go back to submission. That goes back to being filled by the Spirit, which itself then goes back to what? Now. I'll try again. Walking carefully, right? So walking carefully of verse 15, which, by the way, is a group of how many words of walking? Walking carefully in verse 15. Walking in the light in verse 8. Walking in love as Christ did in 5:2. Walking not as the world walks in chapter 4, verse 17. And all of that comes under the umbrella of walking worthy of your calling in chapter 4, verse 1. Therefore, just think about this for a while. The child, and we can go the father as well, the father who responds the way he's commanded here, but let's take the child. The child who walks in obedience to parents is a child who is, again, evidencing that submission which is enjoined by God, but is therefore manifesting, if you will, the work of the Spirit of God in his life. It is something produced by the Spirit of God, and he is therefore manifesting that he is walking carefully, and he is also manifesting that he's walking worthy of his calling. It's all, as you work backwards, it's all tied together here. And what's an incredible thing? If you think about the two sides to this, let's talk about the submission issue, because it's a volitional thing on the part of the wife. Obedience is a stronger term. We come here to children obeying their parents is stronger than the term of submission. But it is very significant that let's take the wives and their submission, which is, again, a middle voice, which suggests that there is a participation, if you will, between the work of the Spirit and the response, and it wouldn't matter who it is, the response of whoever is submitting. It's the working together of the volitional sense of responding to God as well as the work of the Spirit of God combined together to make this an experience that is realized. So we come here to this section. It's a very significant section. And so therefore, the one, and by the way, the other thing too is, if you go back to 5:17, you remember when it says being careful how you walk in 5:15, and then it says three negative positives, not as unwise, but wise, not as foolish, verse 17, but understand the will of the Lord, not drunk, but filled by the Spirit. So you see, the person is again, showing that he understands what the will of the Lord is, verse 17. Showing that he is wise, verse 15. See? All of these things are true, and they're manifested now in this one who, in verse 1 of chapter 6, is enjoined to children, obey your parents. So this begins this section here. And the other thing that is very, very important, okay, You understand what these books are about, and it's amazing. We don't do that today. Probably be good if we did, actually. I remember it was my birthday, I don't know how many years ago, and somebody wanted to give me a present. So the present was they would take us out to dinner, and I was tired. I mean, it was a time when I was teaching full-time, going to UCLA, pastoring a church. It just was a full-time in life, and in the evenings, just didn't want to do anything. But we agreed to do it. So we went out to dinner, and we drive all the way out to right near UCLA. And what we're going to do is spend the evening listening to a man quote the book of Acts from the King James Version. And I thought, I'm not sure. Actually, it was a fantastic evening. It's one of those things where you go and you're refreshed by that. In fact, the matter is, I would love to have that type of thing happen, a service one, because it was very good. It's a very moving thing just to have scripture quoted. But nevertheless, going back to this, you know what they did? They just read the book. This is what their service was. Now, if in fact all of this is in there, you understand that children are participating in the act of worship. Therefore, they are there to hear this enjoined to them. Now, I'm not going to make any statement about how it should be or whatever in this present day. I have my opinion, but I just find it very interesting that children were a part of the worship experience. They were expected to hear this. You see, they were expected to respond to all of this. They would hear what the wives were supposed to do, their mother was supposed to do, and their father was supposed to do. Now they hear what they're supposed to do. This was something the whole church experienced as they sat there and had the letter read to them. So, I think, significant, because then the children were a part of this, and they, and again, we do pamper them too much to try to make them happy, make them enjoy what they're doing, whatever like this. But you know what? The seriousness, the obligation, the sense of responsibility that they were to have as they responded to that which they're called upon by God to do. So, we come to the section. Now, the first thing, the very first word, whether in English or in Greek, very first word is ta techna, the children. Now, we are talking about, when we talk about the term children here, the word, there are two words, by the way, word huios, which we are called, we're called techna too. If you're a technon, you're one, by the way, that's the word. The word actually is T-E-K. And it became titko for some of you, which then metathesized and became tikto, but it is to give birth. And it's so one who is born from you. That's what a technon is. A weos is not that. A weos is an adoptive son. So therefore what happens is, you know that, Augustus Caesar was not the technon of Julius Caesar, but he was the adoptive son of Julius Caesar, see. Caligula, I think the same way, if I'm not mistaken. But anyhow, many of these. If in fact you did not have a son, you could adopt a son, and actually, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Augustus Octavius, actually, was the son of Julia, I believe, who was Julius's sister, if I'm not mistaken. But anyhow, he adopted him. He was not his technon, but he came his huios. Now, what is significant here as you look at this, then, that this is talking about those who are born into a family, those who are part of the family, the born ones, and it starts out with them. And the question... It is significant because the word does not by itself suggest an age. Now, if you had technia, you have the ia business on it, it may be little child, which was John. When you read that translation, John, my little children, it is technia. The example I also give, if you look in the book of Revelation 4 and 5, he says, behold, the one who is the lion of the tribe of Judah, he is one who has already opened this book. And he says, I turned and looked and I said, Arneon, a little lamb. You can find the word paideia, same way. But would you see, this is not that. This is not talking about a little child. A technon can be any age, actually, for that matter. It's the born one of somebody. But do you know in this context, there's no doubt, we understand that it is younger ones for the sake. When you see verse 4, bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So you understand they're probably younger children, but by that, not by the word itself. There's a question, and it is, I don't think one can answer this. One culturally answers this question. When is a child not, to some degree, under the authority still of one's father? And one question is there ever a day when they're not really ultimately under that? Maybe to a lesser degree, when you say, for this reason shall a man leave his father and mother, and the two shall become one, certainly is that. But there certainly is a respect that is due. But in the context here, no doubt, it would seem to be one who is younger, but not because of the word that is used in verse 1. By the way, so much you have to cut away is your cultural type of thing, because in Africa there is an amazing respect for one's parents. So much so you will never mention your father's name. It would never happen. Never happen. Never, never, never happen. I have some problems when, you know, there's marriages after divorce, and so therefore it's not really somebody's parents, so they're, you know, whatever. And you can do that. It just isn't my comfort level, so I'm not judging you. You know that's not how I do. But the calling of an older person like that by the first name just is not comfort for me. But it doesn't matter. But the sense, not because of any other reason than just the sense of respect. And certainly, by the way, notice here, if you will, which is fascinating, because verse 1 is to obey your parents. Now, that's the very first thing. But the second one in verse 2 goes beyond this and says, honor them, you see. It is not just enough to give obedience, but there is a recognition of who they are and what they are. So as it begins this business, it's a matter of obeying one's parents. It starts out with that, but children's relationship to their parents is the very first thing that is done here in this context. Now, the very first word we have, and again, the authority is there, and the authority certainly is a part of that relationship. By the way, I was going to say, you do that. One of the men said, if I'm at my father's house and I'm going to make a trip, and he says it'd be 3 or 4 in the morning when I'm leaving, I don't leave the house without first of all going by my father's bed to greet him before I go. You just wouldn't think to do otherwise. And the first thing you come in, yeah, it's just part of what life is. Again, a deference to the authority and the position of a father. By the way, that is why it is interesting, when they speak of God, there's a great reverence for God. When they speak of elders in the church, it's funny, they don't, the word is alagba, but they don't say alagba, they say alagba. I mean, there is a reverence to the term. It's fascinating, the Old Testament, where it says the honor the gray hair and fear God side by side, because I think you cannot. You see, when you lose respect for those who are older, you also, to that degree, lose respect for God. You do. You can't. You cannot. I'm going to say you cannot. I'll say that. I'll say that statement in light of that Old Testament passage. You cannot maintain a respect for God and lose respect for people in authority. You can't do that. See, in a society like ours, where we've lost respect for law enforcement people, we've lost respect for those who are over us in government, even if we don't agree with what they do, just because of the position they hold, we've lost respect for elders. We've done that, and because of that, we've also lost a degree of respect for God. Did you change the words of the song, or that's how they were? Lord Jesus, I love you. I thank you for that. See, I just thank you for that. That to me is much easier for me to sing when we acknowledge our respect for who he is that way. But anyhow, enough of that. Coming back to this, it starts with this. Okay, so the first word is obedience, and it is a present tense. It's a continuous tense. It's a continuous action. And by the way, it's significant, the very first thing stated in here, children obey. So even by its position, it's in a place of emphasis. And It is a stronger word than the word for submission used of a wife to a husband. It is stronger than that. It is a sense of, I read this to you. Obedience is unreasoning and implicit. Submission is the willing subjection of inferior in point of order. And by the way, also significant as you read this, disobedience to parents is a symptom of a disintegrating social structure. And Christian families have a particular responsibility not to contribute to the collapse of an ordered community. It is significant. Children are here addressed as responsible members of the congregation. Yeah, we do. We've got them down at a level where we don't treat them with the respect that they're due, and they, therefore, don't accept the responsibility they have. And but anyhow, you have it here. And the obedience of a Christian children to their parents is all a part of their submission to Christ. Especially in the fact that as you look at this, you see, obey your parents in the Lord. You know, there are people who say, they get out of this one because they say, you see, the parents must be in the Lord. And therefore, if the parents aren't believers, you don't obey them. That's not what this is talking about. this in the Lord. First of all, the question is, does it belong here? And it certainly does belong here. It's because it's not. But the issue is because of my relationship to the Lord. And by the way, significant throughout all of this section is the Lordship of Christ. We come back to verse 22 of chapter 5. Wives, be submissive to your own husbands as to the Lord. You come here to this section, children, obey your parents in the Lord. You come down to the servant's responsibility, verse 7, with goodwill, render service as to the Lord, not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord. And by the way, there's a play on words. You come to verse 9, masters do the same thing to them and give up threatening, knowing that both their Lord and yours is in heaven. There's no partiality with him. And so therefore, even the play on words is here. And when you go back again to verse 5, those who are your lords, actually, the same word. But again, just that sense of understanding. The lordship of Jesus Christ. And so this is a part of this is, and it says, for this is right. And again, one has this, the word is the same word for righteous, but it is the right thing to do. It is right before God. It goes back to, again, we're going back all the way to 5:17. Do not be foolish, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And so therefore, this is God's will. This is the right thing to do because this is what God wills to be done. So, children are to obey their parents. Is it significant children obey your parents, not everybody else's? But anyhow, I'm intrigued. Let me go back to the home factor just for a while. Well, what was very interesting is... You know, you walk into somebody, and I know people. Some people do that, not too many. Praise the Lord for that. But well, as a pastor, you have a lot of it. You have people who want to tell you how you're supposed to be raising your kids, and they're sure they know better than you do how to do this job. And then you have other people who walk somebody's house and start telling them, and you know that this is an uncomfortable feeling. Somebody walks in and says, "This is how you ought to raise your kids," or whatever like that, and you say, "Come on now." But you know what? We do the same thing with God's children. We don't think God can raise his own children, so therefore we have our... I'm not talking about issues where God explicitly says, don't do this and don't do that. It's areas beyond that that we have decided that people ought to do such and such, and so we step in there to try to tell God's children how they ought to function and don't trust the Father himself who can do a very good job, thank you. I still keep going by Romans 14. Each one stands or falls before his own master. And again, we're not their master. And then that little statement, and they shall stand. So anyhow, we're back to this. Obey your parents. And this is a requirement, responsibility is here. Now notice the next part. Again, it takes it a step further because it moves beyond the obedience to the sense of giving honor. By the way, the word Timothy comes from this word that is used for honor. It is the idea of giving somebody the proper evaluation. Let me read this. It is to evaluate a person accurately and honestly and treat him with deference, respect, reverence, kindness, courtesy, and obedience, which is station in life or his character demands. To honor is more than to obey. It is to respect and to esteem. By the way, it is the form that love assumes toward those who are placed above us by God. So there's not just the sense of obedience. It has got to go beyond that. Somehow, this is a real heart issue where someone comes to a place where they give proper deference to those. And now you just think about this. Go back to 1 Timothy chapter 5 and just think in your mind where it says, Timothy, treat older men like you would what? Your own father. In other words, do what? Give them the same honor and respect that you would give your father. Now, not that you do, but that you should. By not knowing how you treat your fathers. I think one of the great stories out of seminary was two brothers who are now serving the Lord. Their father is still unbeliever. He's Catholic. And they were grown. One was married, the other was single, but both grown out of the home. But when it came to going to seminary, they determined they would not go to seminary without their father's approval. It just was an encouragement to me to think that that's where they would put themselves under an unbelieving father, knowing that this was their father, one whom they should honor and whose opinion they should respect. And their father agreed in both cases for them to go. Then, when it came time for senior banquet and seniors to graduate, there was the father sitting there listening to the message communicated on Saturday night, listening to the message communicated on Sunday night. Maybe his first time ever in quote-unquote Protestant church. But you see, two sons who honored a father. So it is there. It's the sense of honoring your father and your mother, which it leads to a lot of spilled ink. But you know what? I'm not going to spend forever on first commandment with promise. I do think is because in the table. Well, let's go back there. One can quibble over this. Let's go back to Exodus 20 just for a while. My opinion. I give you my opinion for what my opinion is worth. Exodus 20, verse 12. Now notice what it says here, okay? Now let me just start from verse 13 down. Notice, you shall not murder, Exodus 20:13. It's just a statement of fact. Verse 14, you shall not commit adultery, just a statement of fact. Verse 15, you shall not steal, just a statement of fact. Verse 16, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, statement of fact. Verse 17, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. By the way, let me just comment on this again. You remember, we're back to Ephesians again in your mind. Don't turn there yet, because we're going to stay here for a moment. You know that passage in Ephesians where it talks about things we progressively get rid of, and then in chapter 5 it talks about immorality, uncleanness, and covetousness. And it puts this in here, right? As a thing that we don't ever even speak about. I mean, it's not, it put in that category. So some say, how can you put that in here? Because it just is anticlimactic, but it really isn't. It's the source of all of these things. And it is, if you want to, in these commandments here, it is the one that is the most defined of all of them. See? Covet this, covet this, covet this, covet this. Lest you start to say, well, what I'm doing really isn't coveting. God decides he's going to cover all the bases with coveting. Remember Paul in Romans 7? He says, you know what? He says, I thought I was doing pretty good till I read, thou shalt not covet, and then, you see. All right, now, back to these commandments. So we have these commandments. Notice that don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't bear false witness, covet. But now, notice verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. Now, notice what's with that is a what? A promise. So, I think it's just what it says. You can make an issue over it and go back and say, well, maybe there's another one with a promise up above or something like that. I do think that's the point he's making here. It gets people a lot of, I tell you, pages and pages of comment about this. I could read to you, listen, just if you want to, let me read to you the views just for fun, and we will let this go. It is the first commandment in the second table group of commandments. It goes further than that. It was the first commandment that spoke to the heart of a child, the first one that had special meaning for him. That doesn't work. It's the most important commandment of the Decalogue, the first therefore in rank, though not in order of enumeration. That doesn't work. It should be translated primary foremost commandment. That doesn't say, it's not what it says. It just says it's the first commandment with a promise, and that's what it is the first commandment, I think, with a promise. So enough of that. I'm not going to spend my time on that. But anyhow, the point of it is honor your father and your mother. Why again? May well with you, you may live long on the earth. Now why that is significant, by the way, just as an aside here, is the promise that's here. And a twofold one, by the way. It will be well with you, and you will live long on the earth. What that sounds like is you'll go back to the Old Testament, that if you obey the commandment of God, God gave you long life and so forth, and so this is the promise. I still sort of think that's what it is here, although, by the way, this word is late and rare compound, if only here in the New Testament, about long life. And but anyhow, it just seems to me that God is promising here a welfare for those who will walk in a manner that is honoring to him. We come now, though, to verse 4. And fathers. Now, you know what? Why verse 4 is significant? See the word and you don't pass over that quickly. Don't pass over that, see? You see what he's doing here. You see, even when you get down to verse 9, and masters, see? What he's doing here is tying them together, children and fathers, slaves and masters, see? It's trying to show a more intimate relationship that certainly doesn't exist in the society of that day between either slave or master or parent and child. And so you do this, and he moves into and fathers. And again, there are those who feel very strongly that when he does fathers here, he's talking about fathers and mothers, and I don't think so. Just don't think so. Otherwise, he could have said that. I mean, he says parents up above. Why doesn't he use parents down here? He just doesn't do that, see. I have suggested to you, by the way, I do thank you for praying for last Monday, because I did bring this up. But I did, it's funny. You know me well enough, but they don't. And so Scott went to a class afterwards. They did not know who he was, and they were coming positive with the message, but then saying he sure covered a lot of territory kind of stuff. Well, I did that last year and this year, and it sounds like that's something I do, but it isn't what I normally do. But when you've got to get, 8 weeks' worth of messages into one 40, 50-minute thing. But anyhow, I alluded to this. But I do thank you for praying, because it was a good time. Fact of the matter is, they've asked me to come back, and this time, so that I won't run so fast, they've asked me to come back and do 3 sections, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, one day, so that, anyhow, that way I can build something, which is good. Anyhow, back to this. The issue is fathers, and again, bringing the sense of the father's responsibility. Well, what the comment was I made there and I've made here is that there was a fellow professor at Talbot. He was a graduate of Dallas with a Master of Theology, and then a graduate of SC with a PhD in psychology. Now, he came one day because he wanted to be able to make a point, which I heard him on the radio do some years later. He left there and went to Fuller. He's now in glory. But then he had come back to this. What he said was, he says, you see, in Indo-European languages, Sanskrit, for example, when they say heaven and earth, they just put heaven in the dual, and that means heaven and earth. You don't have to say both, you just put in the dual. Or if you say mother and father, you say father in the dual, and it means father and mother. That's true. That's a fact, okay? But there is no dual left, and so he says, well, maybe they're using the plural the same way they did the dual, since there was no dual anymore. I says, but you've got to prove that by having several examples of it. You can't just have this example, and it sounds good to you. And the reason why he wanted to do it was because, he says, in all my years of counseling, I found that wives, mothers, irritate children worse than fathers do, on the whole. Now, I find that interesting. I mean, I didn't know that, but that's what it is. So I heard him saying that, and he had to find some ammunition so he could. This is where we talk about biblical counseling. You make the Bible say what fits what you experience out there, but that's not what this is about. Whether, by the way, yeah, I would, my comeback, maybe. That may be true, by the way, but it may also be true that many fathers do not involve themselves enough in the rearing and disciplining of their children, and leave so much of it to the mother that she is the one that takes the rap. And maybe that is the reason why. Because it certainly is true in many cases. I've had wives who say to me, would to God that my husband had been more involved. And I mean, they'll be involved in the things they want to be involved in. But anyhow, that may be. But the reason here is that the fathers are in a place of leadership in the home, and leadership in the rearing of the children. And no father dare turn this over to the mother and say, this is your responsibility. It's the father's ultimate responsibility. Whoever does the hands-on thing, it lands at his door. And I also know for a fact, especially since I know some of you are going into ministry, is this. There are men who are pastors of churches today, and they do not want to make a decisive decision. And why they like, quote-unquote, what's called the plurality of leadership is because they don't want to make any decisions. They're just more comfortable with their personality. And so they choose to do that. Therefore, what they do is they want the wife to make a decision, see? And so therefore, they can blame the wife, say, see, if we hadn't done it your way. No, you know what? If you let her do it her way, you are the one still responsible. And they do it in a church because they don't want to make a decision, because they don't want to bear the brunt of it. They want to blame somebody else, but they don't want to say, I believe and I made this decision and I'm willing to stand by this decision and take whatever. So it's the fathers who are here. And the negative side of it is don't provoke your children to anger. And this is a continuous thing. Don't be in the sense of agitating your children to the point of making them angry. Now, this does not mean that there's ever a time that whatever, but it means that don't make this a practice of your life to lead them to a place where they live in anger. And again, by the way, there's the flip side of this. In this day and age, we're so afraid of offending our children to want to sin, to offend anybody, offend our kids, whatever. No. You must be firm. That's not the issue. And if they become disturbed by a decision that you before God make, that's not overriding what this is saying. This has to do with someone who agitates children to the point of it. I read this here. It's to rouse to anger. It's to provoke. It's to exasperate. And by the way, again, the point here is goading children into a state of perpetual resentment. This isn't just, it's going to happen. It does happen. They get angry because you didn't let me go out. That kind of anger, that's good anger, see. You go to your room and slam the door and put a hole through it even. Yep, okay. Whatever in the world they do, those kinds of things, that will happen. That's not what this is talking about. Just so you know, that's not what this was talking about. This is talking about that kind of a thing that leads to exasperation, where there is no way. And this, by the way, is not really some big thing, but is to the constant, daily, everyday tensions of family life. But, positive side. And we will come back this next week. We'll bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. We'll come back to those words because the two words are very, very important. So there's the negative side. There's the positive side. But ultimately, the responsibility of the fathers. It is a joint relationship, tis true. But it is ultimately the responsibility of fathers in a relationship of leadership within the home. And I've just watched too many fathers abdicate the responsibility and not be willing to accept the blame. But that's not where it is here. And therefore, to soften this and try to make it mean something else just isn't where it is. So anyhow, that's where we are for tonight. We come back next week.